Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And today, we will be previewing the Border Gavaskar Trophy, which starts in 2 days. We've got Rahul, Sheratan KD, Vignesh Ram, Keshav Huria, Abdul TS, Amit M, Gaurav Yadav, Arsh Agarwal, and Aman Khemka. Also, Sabyasachi Ghosh in the comments. Arko is there as well. Hello to you guys. And before we actually start to preview the series, just a massive shout out to our colleague at Good Area's CS, Chiwanza. His son is cancer-free today, and we're all celebrating that.
Yeah, incredible news. It's been something that CS has been dealing with a long time. And thank you to everyone who helped with his crowdsourcing and everything else. So, yeah, very, very good news.
Absolutely. All right, then. The Border Gavaskar Trophy, Jared. A lot of people are saying it's bigger than the Ashes now. And if you think about it, you know, it wasn't a big deal before the 2000s. I feel like that 2001 series in India, where VVS Lakshman scored 280-odd and India won that game in Kolkata after following on, or after having been made to follow on, that's where it kind of started. Then the Rahul Dravid game in Adelaide happened and India drew 1-1 in Australia. And then Australia beat India in 2004. Fast forward a lot of years where the home side kept winning. India goes back-to-back, winning two series in Australia. And I feel like now they're headed to Australia or down in, under to kind of potentially secure a three-peat. The hype is unreal. It's more than it's ever been before.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it maybe goes back to even late 90s. That sort of, as Australia become really good and India have Sachin Tendulkar, I think there's a real vibe about that at that stage. And obviously India built an incredible side. But realistically, I think it's more to do with the fact that India got bowlers eventually and that the power dynamics have changed, right? Like, India-Australia, I think it was a really good rivalry late 90s, early 2000s. But did English fans care? Probably not, right? Did the rest of the world care? No. So it was really, at that stage, a series just for those two places. It's very hard now to follow cricket anyway. If you, CricBuzz or CricInfo or, you know, I mean, you know, I work for TalkSport and we have a Indian-specific podcast, right? Like, the world of cricket has pivoted so much to India that it's very hard for anything not to be big if India is involved anymore. We had a question on one of the podcasts the other day saying, why was New Zealand's win over India not as lauded as India beating Australia in the BGT? And it's like, you do realize why, right? It's the people. It's the amount of people. So, you know, a big part of it is that. But yeah, I think really the 2008 series, and I know I harp back to this a lot, but I think it was a huge flashpoint because it really did change the power dynamic. And it's when, from there, the IPL comes out, right? And so, yeah. It you know, everything within world cricket changes at that point. And so it had been bubbling for quite a while. And Australia, to be fair to them, Australia's quite dismissive of other nations and always has been, right? But if you listen, they were calling India the final frontier a long way out, right? And that meant something to Indians, right? Like, oh, you've beaten the rest of the world, but you haven't come here and beaten us. Of course, then they did that. So that was a bit of a pain in the dick, I'm sure. But, you know, so I do think that Steve Waugh probably doesn't get the credit in what this has become, but he's probably the person who was like, no, coming to India and winning in India is as important to us as winning the Ashes or as winning anything else. And that's something you don't get from English cricket, right? English cricket can't ever look beyond the Ashes, whereas Australia's always been really good at looking at World Cups and Ashes and everything else.
It's interesting, right? Because that 2004 series, I was listening to Adam Gilchrist and he speaks of it as the biggest accomplishment that he ever, you know, was a part of in an Australian shirt in Test cricket. So it means a lot to that group of players, and that's an indomitable group of players. And if you look at this current series, sure, of course, this is a big billing series whenever it happens. India versus Australia in Test cricket is huge now, undoubtedly. But look at all these subplots at play over here. Look, first, there's a three-peat on the line for India, right? Australia want to exact their revenge. Then, of course, it's a very crucial series with respect to World Test Championship final qualification. Both sides need to win it because Australia, you know, if they lose this series, that Sri Lanka series becomes really tricky. And if India lose this series, they're gone. They probably don't have another option to or chance to qualify. And then lastly, you know, you also have to kind of look at, where was I going with this? There's one more subplot over here, which I've completely forgotten. But anyway, you get what I mean.
There's lots of subplots. Yeah. Look, and I think it's all, that's all a part of it, of what you've just said there and sort of how it's building.
Oh, it's yes, become, I remember.
Go, give it to me.
If you ask 100 people who the two best teams are in Test cricket right now, most of them, or 80-85% of them, will say Australia and India. So there's that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a big part of it as well, that when India got big, Australia were not quite at their best anymore.
Hmm.
And so it's made the contest slightly more even. And at times India have been the better side. So that isn't really the case from 1930 through to, you know, 2000 and whenever it was that India started winning consistently in Australia, right? And so that plays a part too. Like, India had to get to this level. It's all well and good being good in India, but the reason this is a big series now is because India is also good in Australia, right? And also that Australia has managed to win tests in India when no one else had previous to New Zealand, right? So there's an element there of all these things kind of aligning and everything. And if you are an Indian fan and you want to say you're the best team in cricket, beating Australia is part of it. Even when you beat crap Australian sides, like even in the 80s when New Zealand, it was a big deal for New Zealand to beat Australia, right? And some of the Indian sides that have done well against Australia, they've been suspended players or injured players or whatever that may be, that didn't make the wins any less for those fans, because beating Australia is such a big deal. Yeah. And so it really is that there is a sort of final frontier element of Australia, and specifically Australia in Australia, right?
Hmm.
The interesting part about all this is that it's coming off the back of India's greatest slip up, right? Like,
yes,
all those people moaning about them not winning World Cups, losing to New Zealand 3-0 in a test series is 100 times worse than any of those World Cup things that we've looked at before.
No doubt about that.
It's very different.
Also, you know, being a part of the subcontinent, I can confirm to you that cricket is part of identity over here, be it India or Pakistan. Yes. You know, and India has taken a lot of confidence from these test series wins in Australia. So that's a big factor. And in recent times, if you think about it, it's been really feisty, right? Tempers are flaring. Both sides are going at each other. Tim Payne is, you know, slagging off Ravichandran Ashwin, only for Rishabh Pant to go on and win that test match at the Gabba, which was a fortress for Australia. Now, of course, even the West Indies have beaten them. So there's so much going on over here. And when those two teams, you know, they're out on the field, they're not friendly to each other. And I feel like that makes this even more of a spectacle.
Yes. And on top of that, I would add other things too, like the social media element of it has probably come along at a perfect time. And there aren't that many Australians on social media compared to Indians, but there is actually a lot of Australians on social media, if that makes sense. Australia is quite a social media dominant culture, right? So you have a look at Blue Sky at the moment. Blue Sky is taking off of social media. Australia was one of the first early adopter countries. Australia was one of the first early adopter countries with Twitter. Australia was one of the first early adopter with Facebook as well, right? So there is an element there that there are established Australian voices on there for the Indians to talk to and at and around and everything else. And, you know, I'm obviously a part of that, but so is so many different people out there. So I think that makes a little bit of a difference as well. And that is, again, something that has, I would say that outside of, I don't know, players like Ian O'Brien, who were, you know, the first major cricketer on Twitter, perhaps, probably anyway, right? The Australian cricketers were kind of that, the next people to use it as Twitter. Right. There were some famous people on it, but they weren't really using it and they didn't really know what it was about. Whereas Australian players were doing that. So I do think there is a lot of damage. Is damage the right word? There's a lot of conflict that comes from that, right? And Australians aren't going to back down because it's just not how we're brought up, right? So it doesn't matter if 40 Indians have a go at you or not. You're still going to stand your ground and you're going to have a go. And so there is an element of all that playing a part, right? And this is where these things come from.
Yeah, and if you look at the promotions and everything, you know, the ads have gotten far more glamorous and the storytelling is there as well. It's really like hype central right now with respect to the Border Gavaskar Trophy. Let's talk about the teams a bit, right? Australia look pretty solid, but there is one big hole that Cameron Green has left. Now, this guy was a pace bowling all-rounder who was supposed to be the future, and Cam Green was batting at 4 as well. So him going out disrupts Australia's balance, and you need a batting order shuffle, which they've kind of gone to solve with moving Steve Smith back to number 4. And Nathan McSweeney, who impressed versus India A, will be opening the batting.
Sorry.
Yeah, when he plays in Sydney, he'll be Nathan Sydney McSweeney, which I'm really waiting for. So he is not an opener. Bats at 3 and scored those runs or 80-odd versus India A at 4. What do you make of this? Stopgap solution? Everyone seems to be on board with Nathan McSweeney opening the batting, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
My biggest worry is about him in the future, because you are setting him up to, I don't think he's a top order player. I don't even think he's number three. He averages 30 in first class cricket when he bats at number three. He averages 45 when he bats at four, and 50 when he bats at five. He hasn't batted at five all that much. I think he's probably a four or a five. And the reason he's coming in is because he's got a decent batting average over the last couple of years in Australia. The reason he has that great batting average is because he hasn't been batting up the order, right? Because if you bat up the order, no one has a good batting average in Australia, because the Kookaburra balls are pinging around everywhere, and Sheffield Shield games are generally result pitches these days, right?
Yeah.
So the reason he is in the side is legitimately because of the impact of this wobble ball Kookaburra reinforced seam, however you want to look at it, right? And it's like, so now this guy who doesn't do this job is going to do it better. So if you ask me, based on his profile, and I've watched a bit of him on, you know, MV Play and some Shield games as well. Not that I watch that many South Australian games for obvious reasons, but, you know, I actually think he is a test quality player. I don't see him as an opener. Maybe the best thing that he will get in this series is that Bumrah hasn't always been a brilliant new ball or a new ball bowler. And Shami might not play for a couple of tests. But if you had Bumrah at one end and Shami at the other, I just think you're sending McSweeney in. But the truth is, and I've said this a lot, the entire top four. In fact, why don't you read out Soham's message here? Because I've got something to back this up.
All right. So Soham Bhattacharya has a super chat. He asks, Indian batters have suffered because of changing their home surfaces. Same seems to be the case in Australia. What happens to Australian batters if such pitches continue?
So the batting average in Australia has dropped by 10 runs per wicket.
Oh, wow.
Like massive. It's basically almost a quarter down on what it was traditionally, right? And I think if you go back, I think I looked 2015 to 2020 or 2019 or something. I think if you go back further, Bairam, you will find it's even worse, because I reckon from 2008 to 2015, it was probably even higher again, because there were some very flat pitches in Australia at times, right? The MCG
would
got...
you say, yeah, the MCG is probably the... The flattest pitch still is the MCG, I would say.
There's been a couple of test matches that where wickets have gone, but I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong with this, but when Mark Wood and Alistair Cook made runs at the MCG, didn't it get demerit points for being too flat? Like,
might have
it
been
was,
the case.
You know, and I don't think Cricket Australia fought it. Do you know what I mean? In fact, my memory of it was that Cricket Australia was sitting there going, come on, what's happening here? But what has happened is that the Kookaburra has been reinforced.
Yeah.
So it's hilarious. There are all these people in like Jim Maxwell complaining, we shouldn't be using dukes in our cricket. They're not made for us, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you've now got a Kookaburra that acts like a duke. So good luck, everyone. Yeah. You have shield pitches, which for a long time have been towards results. And because of that, of course, you then get a situation where batters just don't bank up as many runs. And then at test level, no one's making runs. You know, as I said, almost a quarter of the runs have disappeared over the last few years. That means that you don't have a situation like you normally do in Australia, where people turn up to Australia and you expect all the top order to just make tons of runs. McSweeney is a risk. Usman Khawaja, I think, is the most informed player of the four. And he has not been in great form this year, but I'm not too worried. It's only from a handful of tests. Manus has been struggling for quite a while now.
Yep.
Steve Smith is bouncing around the order and clearly not the Steve Smith of before. All these players can bounce back. But when you look at Soham's message, what has happened in Australia is very similar to what happened with the Indian lineup, right?
That's true.
Where India made their domestic pitches a lot more favorable towards seam bowling. And then in test cricket, the ball was ragging sideways. No one was making any runs, which meant that when you turn up to India, you are not expecting to play 450, 500, 550, 650 anymore, right? That means the games are going to be a lot more random. Australia seems to be doing a similar thing. I'm not saying they're doing it on purpose, but it's happened in the same way. So that top four is risky.
It's
funny,
risky.
Someone was overrating the bowling lineup, and we'll get to that message, I'm sure, later. I'm like, the bowling isn't being the problem. The batting has been the problem.
If you look at the batting, right, of course, Nathan McSweeney is a risk, but what other option did you have? You could have kept Steve Smith as opener, right? Or you could have, I don't know, promoted Manus, who isn't getting many runs these days anyway. Or you could have gone for like a Marcus Harris or Sam Constance, or who's the other, the third guy who was vying for a spot? Cameron Bancroft, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There isn't a non-risky choice, right?
Exactly.
Because
none of those choices seem like comfortable at all.
No, and I think they went with the one that made the most sense. Like, I'm not fighting back against it as a bad decision. I'm fighting back against it more along the lines of, I can see why this... if this was Marcus Harris or Cameron Bancroft or Matt Renshaw, I think there's an element of you're putting in a role player there, and within that role player, if it doesn't work, you haven't ruined that player.
I'm just glad, Jared, that they haven't gone for Travis Head, because I remember we were doing it Uncovered and people wanted Head to open, remember?
Yeah,
that would have been stupid.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
The interesting thing for me is that Matt Renshaw had actually been playing really, really good cricket over the last few years. So I think, just let me bring up his numbers. I was looking at them earlier. Yeah, so in 2021, he averaged 41. In 2022, he averaged 42. And in 2023, he averaged 45. This year in 13 matches, he's averaged 29. He's probably the guy they should have brought in. But if they think he's not seeing the ball well at the moment, it's not ideal. So they're in a situation again where they're having to do that. There's no non-risky thing. But what I would say is I don't think we should focus too much on McSweeney. I think we should focus on the fact that the top four is not – like if Mohammad Shami was playing in this series fully fit and we were comfortable he was going to play four tests, I would feel very differently about this series than where I do at the moment. And the fact that I've seen Mohammad Shami bowl of recent times, I'm already starting to swing back towards India. Whereas before I was like, okay, without Mohammad Shami, 4-1 seems the most realistic outcome. With Mohammad Shami against that top order as it currently stands, I feel very differently.
Yeah, yeah. Anish has a super chat over here as well. He says, why do so many of our mutuals think Australia is the best test team? They just lost two series in a row to India. Imagine if India lost to Australia for 10 years. Australia has holes, but they've been pragmatic. Very pragmatic. This Pat Cummins Australia, that's been the theme, right?
Why do people think Australia is the best team? Well, they've played 32 test matches in the last 3 years. And they've lost six of them. And they've won 20 of them.
And they are the current World Test champions as well,
and,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think they were massively better than India. I mean, it's hard at the moment because obviously both those teams are very different. I think Australia is on the downslope and India just lost to New Zealand at home. But I don't even think at their best, I can't speak for all of your mutuals, Anish, but I don't think there was much between those two teams. And you could make I think I had India rated slightly higher than Australia fairly consistently. But the World Test Championship was obviously in favorable conditions.
Yes.
But now, looking at that Australian lineup, I think Australia is on a bit of a decline. And obviously India is on a bit of a decline as well.
Absolutely.
So you've got two teams probably coming down. But yeah, if you want to know why, it's because they've won 20 test matches and lost six. So if you compare that to the other teams with the best records, India's won 16 test matches and lost 10. And the next best team on win-loss ratio is South Africa, who's won 12 and lost 9. Like there's a big difference there purely on numbers. But what you're looking at is how they match up against India. And they haven't matched up well against India, Anish, but that's a completely different conversation.
Absolutely. So just to kind of finish off on Australia, right? The bowling is sorted. This is probably the last time Pat Cummins, Mitch Stark and Josh Hazlewood plus Nathan Lyon, all four of those guys will be playing India in Australia, right? In Test cricket. That's fair to say.
So here's Amit's message that I saw before, right? Australia is an average team with only one great player. They've won 20 matches to six losses. If that's an average team, I don't know what we're talking about anymore. But I do think they're on the slide. I don't know who the one great player that he has in that. That's the most interesting thing on that. I'm like, who does he mean at the moment? Like, who would be there? If I just asked you point blank, who is the greatest Australian test player at the moment, who would you pick?
In terms of batters, I'd go Usman Khawaja.
No, he didn't say in terms of batters. Oh. You get to pick one player as a great player. Who would you pick at the moment?
Travis Head, and he's had a lean patch as well. Yeah, I don't know what you're on about, Amit.
I think Hazelwood is the greatest player at the moment.
Solid case, because Hazelwood is the most informed seamer out of the three. But you've got those three guys, right? Pat Cummins, Mitch Stark, and Josh Hazelwood. All of them like over 250 test wickets easily. And Nathan Lyon has more than 500 test wickets. Now,
yeah,
look at the batting.
So just to look at the bowlers. Yeah, just to look at the bowlers, because that's the bit he focuses in here on. So last 3 years, you've got India average 24.52 with the ball. A lot of that is on their home wickets, but they've been a great bowling side and they have options for everything. Less so right at the moment, but over the last 3 years for sure. South Africa have been a great bowling side. They're averaging 25.28 and just slightly behind them is Australia at 26.57. Their bowling has completely held up. I don't think Cummins is the same force he used to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, and I think Stark has been slipping for a long time. But I'm not sure I feel that way about Lyon or Hazelwood, right?
Yeah.
I feel, though, again, the top four is a problem for Australia. The lack of a bowling all-rounder or a batting all-rounder who bowls a lot is also a really big loss for them. So
I mean,
there
Mitch
are concerns
Marsh
with Australia.
Mitch Marsh just came back from injury. I don't think he's going to be bowling a lot and Cam Green isn't available. So those four bowlers, Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon and Cummins, will have to bowl a lot of overs. So that's also an element over here, right?
I definitely think that's a huge thing. And so this is why I was quite bullish on India before their squad came out. But when Mohammad Shami wasn't fit, they didn't pick Hardik Pandya, which I still think is a mistake. And Kuldeep Yadav is either out of favour, injured, or he's just gone missing. I don't even know what the final thing in with him. I think
also, Akshar, don't forget.
Oh, what
Akshar
a question.
Patel.
Look at this question from Manon.
Oh, what do you all make of the absentees in the Border Gavaskar Trophy? Kuldeep, Shami, Hardik, some of Gill and Rohit, Green, Marsh's bowling potentially. Throw in Akshar Patel in this. I don't know why Akshar always gets so much disrespect.
He's in the squad though, isn't he? Is he not?
He's not in the squad.
Oh, okay.
No Akshar, no Kuldeep.
But isn't Akshar traveling with them then?
No, he's not.
Oh, okay. Navdeep
Saini
he was
is, Mukesh Kumar is, and there's one more seamer who I cannot remember.
I don't think they're going to play
Khalil.
Akshar in Australia.
Khalil is
I know some people liked Akshar because he's taller, but I've got no problem with that. But I do think the Kuldeep Shami thing is a problem and the Hardik thing is a problem. That would have been in my squad. And then I would have said, and there's a video on the main channel where I talk about this, Australia is susceptible, right? And they're susceptible in two ways. Their top four is very susceptible. And then if you could tire out their main four bowlers. The issue with that is a couple of years ago when India travelled over, it was easy to tire out Australia's main four bowlers.
Because of Pujara?
Because Pujara and the pitches, right? So at that stage, Australians weren't really bowling the wobble ball all that much at home. The pitches weren't all that explosive. Adelaide was the first ball with the reinforced ball. So Australia was just getting used to all that sort of stuff themselves. And you could tire them out in the time. Before that, they tired them out even more. This current Indian side isn't going to tire anyone out, most probably. They might bash them out. That's a very different thing. So that does help Australia a little bit. But you want Cameron Green's bowling, Aaron Hardy's bowling, Mitch Marsh's bowling, whichever variation you go. And Mitch Marsh probably can't bowl. Cameron Green isn't going to bowl. And Aaron Hardy isn't in the side. So to bring Aaron Hardy in, you have to weaken what is the strongest part of their batting in the last couple of years, which is probably Head and Marsh. So
yes, that's true.
There isn't really a good situation. So both of these teams have issues. Generally, when you look at that, though, what you do at the end of that is you say that the luck goes with the home side at that point.
Yeah. Also, you know, Australia, even if their top four isn't firing as it once used to, they're all very good role players. Take McSweeney out of this for a second. You know, Usman Khawaja.
Damn you, McSweeney.
He shuts up shop at the start, but even he's saying, like, I'm not looking of, or he's thinking of facing Bumrah and not thinking of not getting out, but thinking of where he wants to score against him, right? And Steve Smith and Manus, they do something similar. They're going to consolidate. And then Head and Mitch Marsh come and they go a bit berserk and they counterattack, right? So it's set up in an interesting way. Also, Manan over here says, or asks, how much does fitness matter for a five-test series in comparison to skill, form, and temperament? I think it's a big deal, right? Like, if India are to win the series, I feel like Jasprit Bumrah needs to play a lot and he needs to be the best bowler amongst both teams. I think that's fair.
Oh, I think that's a really interesting one, yeah. I think fitness does play a big part and at the moment, Australia can probably cover, and we're talking on paper here, but Australia can probably cover Hazelwood or Cummins being not fit or not bowling to their full potential in a way that India can't with Bumrah, right? Like that, you know, I think there was a question in the group about, you know, why is it that India have won a couple of times beforehand and they're not considered You know, they're considered to be losing 3-1. Part of it is it's very hard to go to Australia with one seam bowler that you currently trust and expect to win, right? Mm. Now, Border, the last 2021, that was madness and we all loved it and it was, you know, lots of fun. But it's very hard to do that consistently in Australia.
Yes.
And maybe even more so on these current pitches because, you know, Australia have so many options available to them if the wickets are doing anything. And at the moment, India do not seem to have that level of faith in their bowlers. But fitness also, does play a part.
We've heard from, you know, the media and the curator that we can expect the Optus Stadium pitch in Perth to have a lot of pace and bounce. So Australia will make a seamer-friendly surface. That's what it looks like.
I've been told again that we're to expect a short test match. And to be honest, most Australian test matches over the last couple of years have been short. Like that's just, you know, you saw it with the Pakistan series, the West Indies series. And those were teams that weren't even matched up particularly well against Australia. That this is what we see at the moment. We see, you know, slightly different results coming through from Australia. So if that's the case, I think that helps Australia a little bit more because India had that huge advantage with having an all-rounder who can give them extra versatility. And Australia's all-rounders are either injured or not in the side. So I think that's a lot tougher for them at the moment.
Absolutely. And India, of course, they have a host of issues as well. Their captain isn't available for the first test in Perth. Of course, congratulations to Rohit Sharma on the birth of his child. And then Shubman Gill has fractured his left thumb in the nets. That's not ideal because he was averaging 47.4 in this calendar year at first drop. So their opener is not available and captain for the first test. The number three is not available. They're not set on a number six batter. We don't know if it'll be Sarfaraz, KL Rahul, Dhruv Jurel. We don't have an idea. Maybe it could be Nitish Kumar Reddy. And Mohammad Shami, at least for the first couple of tests, won't be available either. And they're playing in Perth up front and then Adelaide versus Australia with the pink ball when Mitch Stark is generally at his devastating best. And the last time they played Australia and Adelaide with the pink ball, they got rolled over for 36. So those first two games could be very crucial over here and India don't have an advantage.
Yeah, I think those first two tests are probably the worst start for a touring team that you could get. I suppose the Optus Stadium is a little bit more variable because if it is going to favour bowlers, that maybe brings in India's bowling attack as well in a way that perhaps another one doesn't.
True.
It gives Mitchell Stark the second test to feel really, really confident. I think it's a tough start. India play a different five-test schedule than most other countries do against Australia. And so it means that the tests are always kind of a bit more, you know, because I mean, traditionally you start the series at the Gabba, right? Which is still tough if you're an overseas player. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's not Western Australia, right? Yeah. And Shubman Gill, I think I sent you this message at the time, but the absolute worst thing to be in cricket is a subcontinental batter in the nets in Australia because the nets are usually about five times quicker than the main wickets are. And so you come off the plane and you go out in the nets. And yeah, I've told this story before about the Afghanistani batters the first time they're at the Wacker nets. And they were just like, why would you make us do this? This is ridiculous. And they were facing their own bowlers, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that the Australian nets are full on. So there was a comment that was just up and then just disappeared. Varun took it down, but I don't know if we got to it. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it, but I didn't read it. So Varun, if you could bring that up again, that'd be great.
We're getting so many super chats, but we'll try and get to them all.
Absolutely. But just in general, though, you know, I just can't really formulate an Indian 11 right now for Perth. I see that the third test is at the Gabba, and then we've got the MCG and then Sydney. I would say that if Shami comes back, I would give India more of a chance over there, of course, with Rohit and Shubman also hopefully back in the team. But those first two tests are looking a bit dangerous. And like, if we are just to kind of formulate an 11 over here, right? Let's say Iswaran opens with Jaiswal, okay? Because there's no other opener. KL Rahul at 3, is it? Who else?
Okay.
Yeah,
it sort of has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's no other option because then you've got Kohli and Rishabh Pant. And at number 6, you've got an option between Dhruv Jurel, who a lot of people have, you know, or they are rating highly after his knocks versus Australia A. Sarfaraz has been with the team for a bit. He's done well in Indian conditions. We don't really know what he'd do in Australian conditions, but he's an option. And then who else do you really even have? KL again at number 6, right? Like, there are not a lot of people. And when it comes to the bowling attack, which spinner plays, who are the seamers that partner Jasprit Bumrah, right? Akash Deep, Prasidh Khanna, Prasidh Krishna, Harshit Rana. Who are those guys? Does Nitish Kumar Reddy play? It's just very hard to kind of get an 11 down.
No, I agree. I think it is confusing. And, you know, we were coming into this series thinking that if Safraz played against New Zealand, that he would make a lot of runs and he'd be in a situation where we could get to where we would feel confident enough that maybe he could come in. Like it was almost the opposite problem that they have now, where they're now thinking that Juve Jarrell might be their specialist. Well, I don't know if he'll play as a specialist number six, but you know what I mean? That he comes into that side. They've been pretty happy before to play with an all-rounder at number eight. That sort of, you know, I suppose Ashwin plays that role and Washington has played that role with Akshar. And, you know, Shardul probably not always, I think he might have done eight in some overseas tours before. So
let's suppose Jurel plays as a specialist bat, right? If he does play as a specialist bat at six, you could potentially go Nitish Kumar Reddy and Ravindra Jadeja to kind of further your batting, and then you could load your attack with seamers. But then again, massive gulf between Bumrah and the rest. So Shami not being there is a huge issue. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So this question was, just like India creating rank turners brings mediocre spinners into the game, do you think Aussies could make similar mistake with their pitchers supporting fastballs? So it's important to note that I don't think Australia have decided to change the wickets for their team. I actually think what happened was that there was a bunch of boring surfaces and Cricket Australia got together and were like, let's make our test matches a little bit more exciting without the knowledge that Kookaburra were going to change the ball so fundamentally that it was also going to affect these wickets. But it's having the same impact, right? So from that perspective, if the wickets do go too far in that way, someone like Nitish, who's probably not a frontline test bowler at this stage, could be quite handy on some of these wickets, right? He could be nibbling it around. So suddenly that does give India a bit more of an advantage from that point. And then if Prasheed Krishna plays, you know, at his full potential, and his full potential is incredible, you know, Bumrah and Shami comes back in, and maybe hopefully Siraj or Akash.
I completely forgot about Siraj, that he was also there, you know, because he's just been woefully out of form.
Everyone's forgotten. But there is an element that...
Pick three seamers for me. Let's suppose Nitish plays, Pick three seamers.
Yeah, then I would, based on the A game, and I didn't watch all of it, but you know, the bits that I saw, I thought Prasheed Krishna looked like he was working things out. And I would probably, and Shami's obviously not going to play in the first test, so I would probably go with Siraj. There, you've got one tall bowler, you've got one wumble ball specialist, and you've got one best all-format bowler in the world. You know, that's a pretty good start. And
Akash Deep and Harshit Rana that miss out.
I think Akash Deep, I'm more interested in him in the pink ball game and the Gabba game, perhaps even the MCG. I'm more interested in those tests for him. So if you were looking at it from a, you know, I'm not against him playing at the Wacker. I'm not against him playing at Optus Stadium. But traditionally in Western Australia, you like a swing bowler bowling into the wind. I don't think Optus Stadium quite has that same impact that the Wacker used to have. So, and I could be wrong. Like, I'd have to go back and look at Hawkeye data and everything to compare that. But if that's the case, then I'd probably go in the other way.
I mean, the stadium is so massive and entirely covered that no wind would even get through, right? But questions.
But the interesting thing about this is MCG has always been a good pitch for swing bowlers. And it's the most covered stadium in the world, because what happens is there's a natural swirl within that massive stadium, because Melbourne is quite a windy place and Perth is not quite as windy, but it gets windy obviously at certain times of the day. So I have no idea. As I said, these are next level things, but where there is excess wind, I don't think you always need it from one direction to help swing bowling. Is it Aaron Briggs, the ECB neuroscientist cricket ball dude, to come on and tell us exactly what the difference is? But I've always thought there are certain grounds, even without the wind coming from one direction, can still swing. But I haven't done, I've actually never been to the Optus Stadium. I was booked to go there once and had to come home for a family emergency. So I've never even been to the place yet.
Also, just based on the comments, I've just realized that Devdutt Padikkal, is it? He's also with the squad?
Yes.
Because people have him in their 11, so he could potentially bat number 3, and then KL Rahul could go number 6. But anyway, none of these options are comfortable. All of them seem a bit scary. And you know,
for both teams, Kohli hasn't been in form.
Yeah, it is. It is quite scary for both teams.
Yeah. And so with that, you usually lean towards the home team. There's so many questions with that Indian lineup. As you know, Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma is obviously part of them. I'm not too worried. I'm not as worried as other people, but I can't guarantee that either of those guys are going to hit form at the right time based on how we've seen them bat recently. So yeah, I do think there's some issues here. Yeah, for sure.
So Ra has a super chat and he's asking, is this a career deciding series for greats on either side depending on the result? You know what? This might be the last time we see Steve Smith face off against Virat Kohli in Test cricket in Australia. So that is regardless of how well they play, just because they're old and both teams are relatively aging, right? So I don't think
Is Ra asking about the legacy? Is he saying, is this a legacy-defining series?
I mean, Steve
or is he
Smith
saying they might retire at the end?
I don't think they'll retire right away. But yes, I mean, we'll get a good idea of where their careers are headed.
I just went on TalkSport and said that I think we will get a retirement at the end of this series.
Okay.
The two names I put out were Usman Khawaja and Virat Kohli. Now, I'm pulling them slightly out of my butt. But I would not be surprised if we saw a retirement at the end of this series.
Also, we've got just another super chat by Sachit Murthy, who's asking, two aging teams, who's hungrier? Is that it? I mean, there's an element of that, but both sides are very hungry. I don't think I will ever doubt the hunger element over here. It just might come down to skill and execution. And I feel like, you know, there's a very good chance where we might be headed into a fifth test match with the series level at 2-2. Like, that's not beyond the realms of possibilities. And I feel like if India are to do well over here, Jasprit Bumrah and Rishabh Pant, those guys need to go on a tear, and any runs that Virat scores then are bonus.
Yeah, I think the aging teams thing is interesting because I would have said coming into this series, India would have been the hungrier side. And the reason I would have said that is that World Test Championship was so important that Rahul Dravid mentioned it in the World Cup speeches or around the World Cup, whenever it was, right? So I know how much the Indians want to win that World Test Championship. However, I think Australia, that commenter from before about, you know, how high we rate Australia, I think Australia are a bit pissed off that India have done so well in Australia over the last couple of series. And if they get a chance to get on top, they are going to try and smash India into the ground, right? I don't think they want to be the best team in the world, and they want everyone to think of themselves as the best team in the world. And this is potentially the end of a couple of players. Like, Stark might not play that much test. I know. Well, Stark actually wants to play more test cricket, but on form, he might not stick around. You know,
let's not forget though,
Usman Khawaja. There's a few.
I think it's very, very important to mention over here that the World Test Championship final is also kind of on the line. So both teams are automatically hungry, right? India need to win the series. A loss in the series would pretty much mean elimination from that final for them. And if Australia, if they lose this, then that Sri Lanka series becomes very, very tense. They don't want that. Both of these teams want to play that final, right? I think that kind of heightens everything and hunger is just evened out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, maybe emotionally, I've moved on from India having a chance of World Test Championship, but of course the players won't. They'll still be thinking that there is. I think after watching the New Zealand men and the New Zealand women over the last couple of months, I think they should be like, we could win 5-0 in Australia. We could give that a go. Why not? So no, you're right. Hunger isn't going to be a problem here. Fitness, form, injuries is going to play a much bigger. And there are some test series where one team is more desperate to win than the other. But I think the Australians, I don't think it matters as much to the Australian psyche that they haven't won as much in India, because traditionally Australia hasn't won as much in India, and they've gone up against a great Indian side.
Yeah.
But there are some players in this side that have never beaten India at home. There are some players in this side who haven't beaten India for a very long time, right? Yeah. Home or away, so it doesn't matter. So they're going to be looking at that and they're going to be thinking to themselves, we owe them one. And India are also going to be thinking, well, we've won twice in a row now. We have a chance here of completely flipping the narrative from what happened in New Zealand in one series. And let's be honest, it would be the biggest asterisk series of all time, the New Zealand loss, if they come to Australia with injuries and form concerns and smash Australia. Like, that would be absolutely incredible.
It would be an interesting three-peat, right? The first one has an asterisk because there were no Smith and Warner. The second one has an opposite asterisk. The asterisk is for Australia. You've lost this series when India were losing their players to injury nonstop and Virat Kohli was, you know, in India to attend to his child. And now you're in this one where, you know, there's no more Chetheshwar Pujara, but there's a lot of, you know, young, exciting talent for India. And Australia have a point to prove. But India also, like, if they can manage a three-peat, then this would just be hailed as one of the biggest ever achievements for Indian cricket, period. And I'm counting World Cups in it. So it's massive, really. Anyway, before we move on to predictions, You want to take some super chats, whatever we've got remaining?
Yeah, I don't know. Varun's all over it. DJ Varun.
Yeah, Soham Bhattacharya says, off topic, but if Anderson gets picked, he'll be the oldest player to debut in the IPL. Poor old Pravin Tambe. Nobody will remember him after that. That's very off topic, but I want it to happen.
Is Pravin Tambe not older than Anderson when he played? I would have thought he was. Maybe he wasn't. Yeah, it might have been earlier. Wow. Look, Anderson's probably not. He's not. Even if he makes a squad, I'd find it very unlikely that he will play. I think he just wants a coaching / mentoring gig, if we're being honest. But I think he wants to be part of the IPL because he hasn't done it. And
yeah,
look, there are a lot of, you know, I was talking to Bumble. Bumble's talking about, like, you know, he wants frequent flyer miles, and maybe he doesn't like hanging out at home and everything else. I think, and I've talked to a couple of players who haven't played in it, and they just, everyone talks so highly about the experience and the party atmosphere and, you know, and everything else. I think there is just an element there of missing out. And I think that's how Anderson feels. Like, I'm not saying money doesn't play a part, but he hasn't put himself in as potentially making a lot of money from this, right? Like, he's quite low on when it comes to that. So I really think the missing out thing is big.
If a team takes a punt on Anderson just for the experience, they better load up on their stock of Guinness, because man loves his Guinness. But, you know, I can see this happening.
RCB have to hire him because they're the place most likely to have Guinness.
Exactly. Also, mentors, right? They play a big role as well. So someone might just snap him up that will give you a game and you can mentor our young fast bowlers. That might be a possibility.
I don't think that will happen. And the reason is before I was involved briefly with RCB, there were 10 players, I think, of overseas players that you could have. Someone in the comments might need to correct me, but I think that was right. That was the original number, 10 or 12. I can't remember what it was now. And they moved it down to 8, which actually from a cricket point of view is really annoying, because it meant that specialist players, you couldn't really afford to have a specialist player on your list anymore. Mm. Everyone had to be playable all the time. And I really don't like that at all. I don't even like the overseas. I just think it should be a completely open league at this point. But I understand why politically that's a little bit tougher to do. But my point being, I'm not sure that is exactly going to work if they do it in that way. So for me, I don't think he is worth a spot from that point of view. But what I would say to him is, look, we don't want your bowling. We want you. If you want to hang out with us for a year, fine. We will match whatever you're going to get paid as a player. But come on and help us out and just tell our fast bowlers how great they are, and maybe teach one of them the wobble ball, and we'll get you on all the best golf courses. And, you know, if you're in RCB, we will literally take you to the place that serves the freshest Guinness in India.
All right, next super chat. Varun, let's do this. I've got in-laws waiting in the next room, so I need to get done with this soon. MFJIMM.
Are they watching the in-laws? But surely the in-laws are watching. Yeah.
They are freaking out about wedding clothes because none of the stuff fits me, and we have to go on a psycho run now after the show is done. But anyway,
awesome.
MF Jim asks 08 Sydney or 21 Gabba for the best fourth test in the Border Gavaskar Trophy. I'm going to go with the Gabba one. Rishabh Pant.
I'll always go with Sydney because I think it's the test match that changed cricket forever.
Oh, okay. All right. Next one. Laughing at Nothing asks, the current Indian team is going to miss players like Pujara or Vihari, whose job is to tire out the Aussie pace attack. Especially when guys like Manas and the other team are literally sending out that message that we are going to try and Pujara it, right?
Yes. Here's what I would say about that, Laughing at Nothing. 3 years ago, I would have been like, you're 100% right, and that is going to be a big issue. I don't see anyone tiring out anyone on Australian pitches in the last couple of years. I think it's been really hard to stay in and bat. So, no, I'm sorry, I can't go with that at the moment. But I get your point. I mean, Pujara would still be handy, right? Does he still play cricket?
Yeah, of course he does. He's always posting his videos and stuff as well. It's funny how people will go on and complain about how no one is talking about Pujara when everyone is talking about Pujara. And the PCCI guys had the tweet out.
He's in our comments quite a bit. Like, so yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. All right. Next super chat. Let's go, Varun. Soham Bhattacharya once again says or asks, why do you guys think India has adopted Baz ball? Wait, why do we think they've adopted Baz ball? Ashwin and Rohit are on record saying that India's management believes that it isn't a good strategy. I don't think they have, right?
Yeah,
they do their own
thing. They haven't adopted Baz ball. Yeah, I think they're just naturally aggressive players, which is a slightly different thing.
Yes.
So England went with a tactic and then picked all the players to back it up. Whereas I think Jaiswal and Safaraz, I mean, we we've seen them in the IPL. This is how they play, right?
Yes.
And so Australia, Travis Head is not trying to play basketball. He's Travis Head, and that's how he's grown up batting. Think we're seeing a whole generation of players coming through now that play in that same way. You know, we will still get David Beddinghams, right? Like, I don't think those sorts of players are dead, and Brathwaite and whoever else and everything else. But there is a whole generation of players now who realize that, you know, I mean, when I saw Keaton Jennings in the 100 and was it in the Big Bash as well he played? I was like, oh my God. Like, even the blockers are trying to score quicker now. So,
yeah.
In Test cricket at the moment, there is always a ball with your name on it. And a lot of these Indian players are like, I don't want the ball to have my name on it. I want the ball to have a ding on it off the boundary.
Yeah. Also, there's a lot more to basketball than higher scoring rates, right? And India doesn't do a lot of those things. So there's that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's
They don't
move
need
forward.
To. They're a better team.
True. Devang Mehta asks, should Shami be risked or kept for England? I mean, I think they're a bit desperate right now. He's got to come and play.
Yeah. A couple of years ago when you had Umesh and Ishant and, you know, all the different backups and everything, I would have said, maybe let's see how he is. Take him over. And if you think he's okay, give him one or two tests. If they want to win this series or be competitive in this series, I'm so high on Shami. I'm not higher on Shami than Bumrah, obviously. But in Australian conditions, I just think the way that the ball's been moving around in Australia recently, you need old ball bowlers and you need new ball bowlers. So Shami causing problems at the top with Bumrah backing him up is such a good partnership.
Completely off topic, but who's your spinner for this game? The first one, Ashwin, Jadeja or Washington?
Jadeja.
Yeah, same. Although Varun said that he's heard murmurs that they might go for Ashwin pairing him up with Nitish Kumar Reddy. So who's to say that doesn't happen?
Yeah, I think, look, if they really believe in Nitish, that's a good option to go with. But and Ashwin should be a better bowler in Australia than more of a threat all the way through the innings bowler than Jadeja. So yeah, I would go with Jadeja. But if they really like Nitish, then gives them flexibility. That's why I wanted Hardik in the side, because Hardik gives them more flexibility again.
And the $1 million question is that whether or not Nitish Kumar is ready.
Hey! That's why he's got in-laws, everyone. That's what in-laws want.
Okay, Vinod has a super chat. We cannot see it. Anyway, Suryansh Ahuja has the next one. He says, away win in England and India, Latham second to Cook this century? As a captain? No.
Yeah. As an opener, does he mean?
I don't know. As a keeper, because Cook wasn't one? As a left-handed batter.
Look, Latham's done a lot of really good things in his career so far. He just goes through periods where he doesn't make any runs anymore, doesn't he? And I think it's such a shame with him, because I really liked him as a cricketer and, you know, it allows me to talk about his old man and all sorts of things like that. But he just has, there are periods where he's really good and then he disappears and it happens too often with him. But
when I picked him in current test openers and crick picks, Jared shat on me, who can go and see that crick picks. So
I mean, you have to narrow it down when Jared is shitting on you during crick picks, but sure.
All right. What do we have next, Varun? Give it to us. Rishabh Sharma says, is there a specific definite scientifically proven reason why a ball actually swings? Oh my God. Last I checked, we don't have a proven reason why balls swing in the air. You really don't want me to go clothes shopping, do you, Rishabh? You don't ask Jared these sorts of things.
I've been chatting, as I said, to Aaron from the ECB recently. I don't know if he works for the ECB, but he was contracted with them or anything. We'll get him on for a Redinger and he can explain it. Mm-hmm. I believe he is as close to as possible as the world leading expert on this. But if you want to know the real reason why the ball swings, it's the seam. That is the reason that the ball swings. And that's why with a baseball, in order to get it swing, you have to put revolutions on it. And with a cricket ball, you don't.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. We've got one more super chat over here from Soham Bhattacharya once again, who's just saying, I'm just getting my super chat fill in. So yeah, thank you for all of the money.
Can I just answer this question for the next 20 minutes while Bayram sweats and like his in-laws break into the studio to take him out?
Yeah, you guys better hope I find a Shirvani. Anyway, just to kind of kill off this show, we do these predictions and previews now. So I'm going to keep this real quick.
Do we?
Yeah, we do these now. So highest run scorer for you, Jared, I'm going to go with Smudger. I feel like he loves batting versus India and he's going back to number 4. I think he's going to score a lot of runs.
Travis Head.
All right. Okay. Highest wicket taker. My pick is Jasprit Bumrah. I think he's going to take at least 30 to 35 wickets in this test series.
Whoa. That's a lot of wickets in a five-test series. Wow.
That would be fun
if he does that. If he takes 35 wickets, can you imagine how many more videos I'm going to make on Jasprit Bumrah?
and how many more hits we'll get, because those ones are always more than 100K.
People love Jasprit Bumrah videos. I am going to go Hazelwood.
Oh, nice one. Nice one. Saad from Pro Sports also went Hazelwood. So you guys share that. All right. Scoreline then. It's a tough one. I feel like it'll be a very competitive series and moments might decide the series. Literally. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it. 3-2 Australia. Just leaning slightly towards Australia.
I'm probably 4-1. So I was 3-2 when I thought Shami would play and Hardik would play. Shami's might still play, so I could be convinced. If I think he's going to play four tests, I'm more interested in India coming back, because I'm not that sold on the Australian team at all, really. at the moment, their top four doesn't give me much. But at the moment, I think it's 4-1. But if he comes back, you could convince me into 3-2. What I think will happen is, I think there'll be, hopefully, but I'm pretty sure on that, this a time in this series when it feels like India can win the series. That's what I'm pretty sure of. That doesn't mean that it won't swing back violently. These things usually, and I know what happened in the last month doesn't help because of New Zealand, but generally these things swing back pretty violently towards the home team, right? We've seen that with India and Australia and other teams before. That's what I kind of think will happen. But I think India can play good enough cricket to at least make us believe, if nothing else.
I see a world in which we go to Sydney with the series level at 2-2. But I mean, that might be me slightly overrating India.
My God,
I still think
they're
a solid team.
I honestly think that would be just huge. After everything that's happened recently, that would be such a good thing for cricket in a whole. So, I'm covering this from England and I'm going to be sleeping overnight and I won't see the sun for about 25 days. I really want this to be a close series. I don't want to be in a situation. Like, I covered the last Ashes and I remember messaging John Norman because he was in New Zealand and saying to him, I'm not sure I can ever do this again, because it broke my spirit knowing that I was getting up for something so inevitable. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was the thing that killed me. It's like, I have to stay up in the middle of the night, not see my family as much, not see the sun and see something inevitable. I just want to be surprised. So I hope all of our predictions are wrong. I kind of always hope all of our predictions are wrong.
Hey, my prediction makes sense. It gives us more content as well, more views, more traffic. Okay.
Look at you.
Your prediction is a stinker, 4-1 Australia.
Yeah, well, can I say though, we did predict that it would be 3-0 India New Zealand. We got that one right.
True.
Just not the right team.
Just the wrong team. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we've got another super chat. So I don't think Trishant Khatri has asked a question over here. He's just sent us money. So I think
that
should be that. And I hope you guys enjoyed this preview. Do let us know all of your thoughts in the comment section below. Oh. Yeah.
I know Bayram has to go, but just remember, we'll be doing a live at the end of every day's play on the scoreboard here. And me and Bayram will be doing reviews of the test matches. And there will probably be something live almost every day of this series where we get a chance, plus plenty of stuff over on the main channel. And I just did a video talking about how hard it is to beat Australia in Australia as well.
Also, plenty of footmarks. You can also expect that on this series specifically, because we'll be working a lot on it.
And if you're a fashion designer based in Pakistan and you can help Bayram out with his wedding outfit, please do.
Absolutely. All right. Also, a quick reminder to all of you guys, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. I'm off to buy some clothes. Hope you guys have a good one. We'll see you soon enough. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.